All right. Hi, everybody. My name's Rick Sutley. I'm an Elkie. And I didn't say the word Elkie when I first got here. That alcoholic word was so hard to come out of my mouth. And today I'm just an Elkie. And like a lot of things, it's a whole lot easier to be simple than it is complicated. But I had to do a little work to get ready for this. You know, as we get up and try and tell somebody about our experience with a step, you damn well have better looked at it. It seems like a good idea. I probably got too much stuff up here, but we'll see what 25 minutes looks like. And before I start, something out of the big book. It says, there is a principle which is a bar against information, which is proof against all arguments, which cannot fail to keep a man or a woman in everlasting ignorance. And that principle is contempt prior to investigation. There was another paragraph it took me a long time to figure out. I was one of those, you know. I said, oh, God, oh, boy, prayer. The thing that really got me was total abstinence. What a concept. I'd have never thought of that on my own. So here I am, you know. They say nobody gets here by accident, but I did. A car accident. I was on my way to another bar, and I hit either two or three parked cars and a telephone pole. But I didn't know that night. The next morning, I was invited to go to St. Vincent's Hospital. And I went up to the fourth floor, and these nurses up there were asking me all kinds of questions about not only where I'm from and where I work, but it got down to the part they were asking, well, how much do you drink? And I remember the words, I don't know, I just drink them, I don't count them. And that's the truth. And then she goes, well, I need a number. And I was trying to make it not look so bad, so I said, 10. That's real conservative. And she goes, and that's all. I says, well, I sniff a little of this, smoke a little of that, yeah, do some shots. Okay, whatever the amount you just told me, we're going to double that. Because you guys tend to lie. I was almost offended. Then they got to the big one. They said, are you an alcoholic? No, I said. The repeat question, are you an alcoholic? I said, I might have a problem with drinking, but I don't think I'm an alcoholic. The repeat question. I says, you know what? I don't know what an alcoholic is. And for the fourth time, she asked. And I said, God, I know what she wants me to say, but I don't want to say it. And I said, yes. I didn't even say the word alcoholic, and I was crushed. Just right there. And that was my introduction to detox. And then I went into a room down at the end of the hall, and everybody's smoking, so I got my cigarettes out and started smoking. And the one thing that I didn't know nothing. I didn't even know there was a program called AA. 34 years old. Thought I knew what was going on. And it's amazing how much you can learn after you thought you knew it all. You know, like you tell your kids, yeah, I know. That's how I was. Yeah, I know. But I didn't know. I was the last one to know. My family knew. My friends knew. My co-workers knew. My neighbors damn sure knew that I was probably better than just a hard drinker. And that's how I was introduced to AA. And all I remember in that group of about eight guys, the question come up, well, why did you get drunk again? And they said, stop going to meetings. And it went all the way around the room. I don't even know what the hell a meeting is. So I learned something. There's going to be one at 6, and Sister Carol is going to be there. And she was my first lead I ever heard. And I thought, what a sad story. She's a wonderful woman, and I thanked her every time I see her. But she didn't drink kind of like me. At least she didn't put it out like that. And I found out it doesn't matter how much you drink or how often you drink, it's what it does to me. And I had some learning to do. I didn't even know there was a term called blackout. When I got in detox, they were talking blackouts. I said, where are those? It's when you don't remember, like the end of the evening, the drive home. What? They actually have a name for it. I didn't come in here with a lot of information. You guys had an empty cup to fill up. And I went to the club. That was almost my entire first year of sobriety was at the Elkanon Club. I went to St. Vincent's Detox on a regular basis, talked with people that were in there, gave my first lead up there when I was 6 months. What in the hell are you doing, Push? I thought this guy that brought me up there was going to lead. He said, there you go. That's what we do in AA. We help each other. I never got out of that habit. I went to Hammett Care Unit, I believe it was called, and Mill Creek Detox. And my sponsor says, that's how you're going to stay sober. And the first step, we. You don't have to get sober alone. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. I so much liked it when I heard a guy say, I'm powerless over alcohol, my wife's unmanageable. I talked to him after the meeting. But this is serious stuff, so don't be laughing. When I heard all these little phrases, one day at a time, live and let live, you know, it was endless. You guys had a bunch of them. How? Somebody had that shirt on. Oh, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. That was mentioned more than once every day. And I needed that. I didn't know I needed that. I thought I had bought in. But when the reality started to sink in, this is... I don't know if I can do it. I had never tried. That's about the only thing I... A lot of people say they tried many different ways to quit. I never saw any reason to quit. And I guess I reached my level of too much trouble. And I just kind of did it. And no matter how you get here, they say it doesn't matter. Yale or jail, here we are. And it was a real learning curve. And I just happened to have the grapevine with Bill W. in it, talking about our steps. I won't read the whole thing, but back in 1938, he was writing the big book, and he says, I was anything but a spiritual mood on the night when the 12 steps of AA were written. Slouch. I was sore and tired, clear through. I lay in bed at 182 Clinton Street with pencil in hand and a tablet of scratch paper on my knee. I could not get my mind on the job, much less put my heart into it. But here was one of those things that had to be done. Slowly my mind came into focus, some kind of focus. Since Ebbie's visit to me in the fall of 1934, we had gradually evolved from what we call a word-of-mouth program. Most of the basic ideas from other people, though subject to considerable variation, it all boiled down in a pretty consistent procedure which comprised six steps. We got a dozen, you know? And what he went on to explain was, because he bounced this off people, I guess, trying not to do it all himself. Our steps would have to be more explicit, he said. This is back in 1938. He's never met any one of us. There must not be a single loophole through which the rationalizing alcoholic could wiggle out. Man. Maybe our six chunks of truth should be broken down up into smaller pieces. Thus, we could better get the distant reader over the barrel. And at the same time, we may be able to broaden and deepen the spiritual implications of our whole presentation. So far as I can remember, this was all I had in mind when the writing began. And, you know, he really was, I believe, touched by God. And so are we. And you may not believe it, but that's the truth. The things I did when I was drinking, I should have never made it here. But, like all of you, something happened. And I was thrust into this. I didn't do this because I had a good day. I came in here because I didn't know what was wrong. And it was shocking, the things that we talk about. And some of those words are pretty haunting to me today. I've heard them so many times. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we're real alcoholics. Bingo. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. The obsession of every abnormal drinker, the persistence of this illusion, is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. I guess that was my destination if I left here. That's the way I felt. I got a DUI. I was in trouble. And that was my second DUI, so I wasn't a rookie. And I didn't come into this for the right reason. I come in this to get out of trouble. And that's what my wife thought from the very beginning. She said, oh, he's going to play that game. Till he gets out of trouble, then he's going to be on his way. And I fooled her. And she was shocked. And sometimes when I would come home a little late after a meeting, you know, like we talked after a meeting, she'd come over and says, well, where are you? I said, I was at the club. And, you know, and she'd come over and do the old sniff test, make sure I hadn't had any. Come on, woman. I was very dishonest with her, as well as dishonest with myself. You know, that first step, underneath it in the table of contents, who cares to admit complete defeat? I thought that was un-American to raise up the white flag, you know? It's like, I was thinking too much. But Max Kaler, when I was at Serenity, he says, The war is over. Put down your weapons. I didn't have a clue what he was talking about. But he said it so often, eventually some of us started saying, what's he talking about? It was what was in the reading, denial. I didn't know, but I had great denial. And I think that's a characteristic of us. I heard a woman talk one time, Millie Lawler, and she just broke me up. And I don't even know what part of it she was saying. But it was just an emotional lift. And it was, she said, this is a disease of blame and denial. And that really hit me. I was always blaming someone else and denying that it had anything to do with me. So I think I belong here. Admission of powerlessness is the first step in liberation. It's a relaxation of, or a relation of, humility to sobriety. Mental obsession plus a physical allergy. Why must every AA hit bottom? You know, one of the things that caught my eye when I was new was the fact that I have allergies. Hard work, step work, eggs, fish, nuts. And, you know, so I had a pretty good concept. I had to avoid them at all consequences. And I thought, wow, yeah, that's what it is. I'm sick and I got this allergy. But it was a very good, it was very easy for me to transfer that thought over to alcohol. I don't mean my first year was easy. It was easier because I had an allergy, I believe. And it's a long way from where I, the day I got here. I went to the Alcanon Club, and after I got out of rehab, this is what they told me on the way out the door. You want to stay sober? Go to AA. They gave me a meeting schedule. And that was the best advice they could give me. And I gave it a try. The first night I went to an AA meeting outside of Serenity by myself, I went to Hammond Hospital. And a girl from my grade school was leading. Jesus, you know? Exactly, huh? It was just, God was doing these coincidences for me that I could never have made up. And I didn't even know they were coincidences. I just thought they were fortunate. Like when I was at Serenity, I was depressed, you know, because we can't drink no more. And I'd walk around with my head down. And as I was walking one day in the springtime, there was something sticking out of the mud, and I reached down, and it was a prayer card covered in plastic. And St. Anthony, I carried it around in my wallet for years, and I pulled that out every now and then, because in there it says, place your request here. And I said, man, that's a perfect place for me to put that. And if it wasn't that, it was the Serenity Prayer. When we have that committee up there talking, when we're new, we're trying to think, we're trying to not think, and it all goes to hell. You know, your brain are not ready for this. Mine wasn't. Excuse me. None of you, I'm sure. I had it written down on one of my pages in the big book. Static in the attic. I didn't make that up. I don't make any of this stuff up, to be entirely honest. It's all stolen from AA and from you guys. And that's what we do, though. We share what we've learned. I didn't know that in the very beginning. I didn't, you know, people were saying, if you want what we have, you'd be willing to go to any length to get it. I don't know what you guys have yet. Because when people said they had 20, 30 years, I'd go, he's a liar. You know, and that was just honesty. I didn't think people did this. When I was introduced to AA, I thought, are you kidding me? There's a group of people who stay sober on purpose? It was stunning. I mean, so what if I was 34? I was dumb as shit. I could say that now. I sometimes have relapses to that. Only through utter defeat are we able to take our first steps toward liberation and strength. We had to just give up. And you know, once I was going to meetings maybe 2-3 times a day, because I was real sick, and I wanted to get this, but it was just so confusing. And my first sponsor was Merle Grotto. Great guy. He helped me immensely. And he said, what kind of meetings are you going to? I said, well, discussion meetings, lead meetings. He goes, 12 and 12 meetings, big book meetings. So I'd never been to one. So, well, you're going to start. And see, what I read wasn't what you were reading. You know, when we talk about a certain step, I was amazed at how many people had just a little different take on our steps. And I really had to pay attention, take notes, you know. I wasn't getting it all. But you guys seemed so profoundly sure that I could do this, that I could get over being an alcoholic by doing what you do. And those guys at the club were hard. I mean, but I needed that. My best advice has come through criticism, not compliment. Can you imagine? Criticism. And probably get criticized after this. It says, we know that little good can come to any alcoholic who joins AA unless he has first accepted his devastating weakness and all its consequences. Whew. You know, I didn't get that the first time I read through it. Missed it. Until he so humbles himself, his sobriety, if any, will be precarious. Eventually, I started to get the point that you don't have to be hanging on with white knuckles. Work these steps and better things will arrive. And I trusted, because I didn't have nowhere else to go. I had never tried to do this, and you guys seem willing as hell to criticize. Ask me, you know, all these old timers, they would walk by and they say, when are you going to get honest? Hey! Now I say that just to get someone's attention. As my sponsor says, you have to get somebody pissed off to tell them what's really on your mind sometimes. I mean, that's just my experience. Let me see here. Almost over, right? If we had never taken the first drink, thereby setting the terrible cycle in motion, therefore the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than his body. You know, this was too much all at once. But that's what we do. We share. And something that I'm sure I read every page of the 12 and 12 in the big book, but there was things I missed. even though I read them. And I heard a guy lead one time, his name was Keith Drum, and he had it memorized. I can't memorize shit. But, excuse me. It says, who wishes to be rigorously honest and tolerant? Who wants to confess his faults to another and make restitution for harm done? Who cares anything about a higher power, let alone meditation and prayer? Who wants to sacrifice time and energy in trying to carry the AA's message to the next sufferer? No, the average alcoholic, self-centered in the extreme, doesn't care for this prospect unless he has to do these things in order to stay alive himself or herself. When he said it that day, it was like something I had never heard before. He was so profoundly struck by that paragraph, and then so was I. So when I chair 12 and 12, I like to do things like my favorites, talk about them. The fact is that for most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, we have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. Man. Along the way, you know, you get these phrases. And I actually felt sorry for a lot of you guys, because I just didn't know. They said, I can't take one drink or I'm going to be drunk. How many times did you hear that? Man, I had to get, at least get, you know, a dozen to get going. And this guy can't even take one. My brain was, it's not quite right now. But my first impressions and then what happened, you know. That part about dying kind of gets your attention. They'd say, do you want to live or do you want to die? Whew, why don't you sugarcoat it a little bit? But they put it right out there. And that's what I've learned. We don't want to be dishonest or overcompensate for somebody. Tell them the truth. That's what I learned. My sponsor also said, just because you're being good at being sarcastic doesn't mean you have to do it all the time. Almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings, which the process requires for its successful consummation. All there was left to do for us to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. I was about a year sober when I knew what that meant. There they were. The spiritual tools were just above it. But I wasn't able to grasp. And, you know, I can't go wrong talking about steps if you take it right out of the big book in the 12 and 12. They were so precise. And it's... I love the history of AA. When I got sober, then I started hearing these old guys talking about how this started. 1935 in Akron, that's only like 100 miles away. Two guys got together and boo boo boo. Next thing you know, it was a little more spiritual than that. But they began what became to know, be known as Alcoholics Anonymous. And I just find that just amazing that from such humble beginnings that we could get to where we never could have imagined Because my life was circling. You know, they said, drinking trouble. Jesus. Says, I didn't get in trouble every time I drank. But whenever I got into trouble, I was drinking. Where do they come up with this stuff? The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could not do by ourselves. You know, that's pretty plain speak. If you're not reading the white lines, you're reading the black lines, as they say. An alcoholic will be absolutely unable to stop drinking on the basis of self-knowledge. This is a point we wish to emphasize and re-emphasize to smash home upon our alcoholic readers as it has been revealed to us out of bitter experience. They were trying to make a point, I think, and they do that a lot in a book. They damn sure make some good points. I think God was somewhere in there helping his hand write some stuff. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. I always think of a cow when I say that word, utterly. Sorry, did I say that out loud? Lack of power, that was our dilemma. Well, that's what this book is all about. Finding a power greater than ourselves. And to rely on something that I grew up kind of, I'd say the prayers, stand up, sit down, you know. I was an altar boy, I went to Catholic school, so what? I didn't believe you'd ever help me. And even though it's just the first step, you almost can't go to a meeting without the 12 steps being written. And you hear those words, God, higher power, you know, pray. Oh, man. And they say what you have to do is change your picture of God. I had a picture of God that was from my youth. He was punishing. He was making a list. And I just thought, he's never going to help me because I've done so many terrible things. And they said, it's available to anybody. They said, even you. Thank God. There is a solution. Great news to people who suffer from alcoholism. That God gave us, my opinion, God as I understand him, gave us this program, gave us those words that still help us to stay sober today. And I can't help but be humbled by the fact that it started from such almost a coincidence meeting between a couple of fellas. And one said he thought he had an idea about what we can do for one another. We could tell people that we think to stay sober, you got to work with somebody else. Well, in the beginning, somebody had to work with me. And I wasn't working with anybody. It took a long time before I ever felt okay. these guys look like hard questions.
Don't tell me good point.
sometimes we become irritated or refuse to talk when something hits us that we weren't ready for. It's like, man, that was too much. And I could remember feeling like that. There was a lot of resistance. Even though I thought I made a connection with God. But this is what I got. I said, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. And that's the longest journey begins with the first step. Something as simple as that. And that's where we start getting sober, on the first step. Thank you.
Hey, now we have question and answer. Anybody have questions?
Yeah, quiet, you got. Oh, we got one.
Thank you very much, Rick. I appreciate everything you had to say. But my question is dealing with it. Oh, I'm Helen and I'm an alcoholic. I was Helen at the beginning of the meeting. I haven't changed names again yet. Anyhow, working with a newcomer who is actually suffering from a white knuckle sobriety, just holding on. What suggestions as a sponsor or just someone that you know in the fellowship to make it through that period of white knuckle sobriety?
For me, a lot of times I found that saying real simple things like, it'll get better. You know, just as I told that to a doctor I was sponsoring, and he says, after about 6 months, he goes, you wouldn't believe how much that simple little phrase helped. You know, I was talking about other stuff, but I said that almost every week I saw him. Being honest, that's what I learned. That's the best thing you guys did for me, was to be honest. Not brutally honest, most of you.
Thanks, Rick. Hi, I'm Jim. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jim.
When you were talking, I remember many years ago when you used to live in Erie, we would go on 12-step calls, and sitting there, and the guy would be either terrified or belligerent. And I remember you saying, I understand because I've been there. And that always seemed to calm down the situation. We've been there. We've been through the fears. We've been through all that stuff. And then when we go to the hospital with whoever, and or we wherever we took them, Crossroads or whatever, and we would sit there, and he would be going through the intake process. We would sit there, and it'd be 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and you were cracking jokes and we were having fun, but I remember that, and it was so important. Even the nurses, we'd make them laugh because we were dragging people in all the time, and I just wanted to say thank you. Those are great memories.
Thank you, Jim.
And you know, I envy some of these young guys that can go out and still do that. Thanks.
It's not mandatory.
Yeah, this is Helen again, and I just have this question. I don't know why Jim reminded me of it. Is it harder for a man to get sober than for a woman?
Oh, man.
I don't know. I've never been a woman. And that's all I'm going to say on that.
That's bad around here.
I just want to know, are you going to be this funny through the whole thing?
Only except where the serious parts are.
Very good.
Jim Alcoholic.
Hey, Jim.
Thanks, Rick. A lot of really good stuff in there, reminding me of how uncomfortable it was first coming into Alcoholics Anonymous and reading the book and how nothing really made sense. So if there's anybody new, just keep coming back. It starts to make sense. But I don't know if you said a lot of stuff. I don't know if you said in there anywhere at what point or how you realized that you were powerless over alcohol and that you needed to stop digging.
Well, it happened sort of over a process. You guys wore me down. And going to the club, that was like 4 blocks from my house. I never knew that Alcon Club was a non-drinking club. I lived on the Lower East Side. I went by there all the time. Imagine that. I'm sorry, what was your question?
At what point, either before Alcoholics Anonymous or after your introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous, were you able to realize and admit that you were powerless over alcohol?
Oh, it was clearly after I got to AA. I had no clue about powerlessness in my drinking or in my life of other people, places, and things. Had to learn to accept. But they wore me down. I wanted to stay sober because when I went in front of the judge, I wanted my lawyer. I had to hire a lawyer. So when he go to court, I wanted him to say, "Your Honor, since the day of his accident, he went to a rehab and he goes to AA all the time." And Michael Joyce says, "So what?" Punishment was meted out. And all of those things help wear you down. And I say that in a nice way, wearing you down, because we have a lot of denial. We think we know. We don't want to be one of these. But the fact is, if you drank like if you drank like alcoholics drink, when you get here, you have a choice to make. That's what I found out. That exit sign looks pretty attractive. When I was new and they said total abstinence, that exit sign looked very good. It got better. I know how to get out now, but well, I'd like to thank you. Like questions. It was one of the best things my sponsor said, make sure you ask me a lot of questions, because if you have questions, I don't know it. You have to verbalize them. And that was true. And that's where the solving started to come from, the relating. And I'm blessed. I used to always say I was lucky. And my sponsor says, "You're not lucky, you're blessed." For an alcoholic to walk in here, live the lives we did, and to be able to do what we do, indeed, I'm blessed.
Okay. Good job.
Thank you.